are back. Oh, you don't want me to do the magazines? Okay. There's.
You guys want to edit your bios before we read them? We're good.
We could, if you want to line item this, we can make it happen. Hi.
All kinds of damn magazines.
Yeah. Fair enough. Because you did a talk this morning, right? And they kind of did like the big long list of every design publication. Yeah. You can kind of say that. Hey, Donovan, it's me. It's Nate. We're at the Reflex Blue Show. We're at the Howe Conference.
Studio 280.
Back at Studio
in Hyatt.
280, which I'm very happy to see all of our stuff still is here. Again, it hasn't been removed for a second time. Not that there's a lot of stuff in here, but...
I was going to say, what stuff are you talking about?
Yeah, just the very few things that we have remained. Well, we are joined today with our very special guest, Michael Osborne. And Dennis, I didn't get your last name.
Whalen.
Dennis Whalen, both from Michael Osborne Design out of San Francisco. I'm going to do a quick, potentially edited bio to bring our listeners
maybe
up
they
to
can
see,
just beep you out if you start saying anything you don't like. Beep, censor that.
Yeah, then do the Tourette's thing. And,
okay.
So, to bring everyone up to speed, Michael Osborne is the president and creative director of the San Francisco-based Michael Osborne. We did that. Michael Osborne Design. His work has been featured in a goddamn lot of graphic design publications. Son of a bitch. Let's see. You've designed the 2002 and 2004 love stamps, weddings, a lot of stamps.
A lot of stamps.
A lot of great stamps.
More stamps coming out next year.
Oh, what are the ones coming out next year?
Oh, this is...
My grandpa worked at the post office for years, so I still have something nostalgic about the post office and stamps.
Good for you. I've done six so far, and I have six what they call pre-sorted standard stamps coming out next year.
Okay. Any particular theme to those?
If Visa is sending out 100,000 pieces of mail to Cleveland, this stamp is cheap, less expensive. They bundle it up. Instead of making 100,000 trips, they make one trip.
Right. The
not one that I will get to send out.
You have experience with that with the mailings we used to do,
right?
The pre-sorted.
Order. They come in rolls of 10,000.
Right, and that's all you got to do.
Does the design for it say "Thank you for not spamming and using email"? Thank you for using a stamp.
It's on the back. Yeah, it's on the sticky part.
Okay. I always thought that spam would eventually take on the sort of low line accepted level of junk mail, or let's be marketers here and call it direct mail. But no. Also, I think the content is very different between what I get in my inbox for spam and what I get in my mailbox.
I don't want to talk about your spam.
Let's not do that.
So, Michael, what is the what's your personal favorite of all the stamps that you've designed? What are you the most attached to?
It has to be the first one because it's like your first child, and it's just an honor to be able to do a stamp.
Which stamp was your first?
It was a 2002 love stamp. It was very colorful.
So the L.
It had a block, L-O-V. The V was a heart.
Yeah.
And, that one was so special because that project was a godsend and, floated down from heaven and landed on my desk. That has to be it. Yeah.
It's a
fun project.
Kicking it off.
They don't pay much, but, who cares?
Well, they'll give you a roll of 10,000 stamps.
Yeah.
Why do you need money if you got 10,000 stamps?
Right. Do they pay you in the ability to mail? Thanks.
I love it when I get the... I save a lot of it. And the current one I have is a flag pre-sorted stamp. It's not a photograph of the flag. It's a graphic. And it's red and white stripes and the blue center. And I got one not long ago from a form letter from Sarah Palin.
Okay.
The stamp was on crooked.
I don't bump.
The stamp was on crooked.
That's awesome.
But I have a big stack of things like that I've saved with my stamps on them.
Nice. That's got to be. So, do you collect other stamps as well? Do you pull them all in?
That's part of it.
Once you get started on that, right?
Once you get going, well, especially designers, a lot of designers collect stamps, I think.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of artistry to that little thing. They don't. It's not like they're just going to throw some kind of tiny little icon on it and just go as they perfectly well could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. I don't know much about it, but now I'm thinking like, well, is it like money? Where like if you want to make sure people aren't making their own stamps, you have to put that level of artistry in it.
It's basically America's calling card. It tells, if you go back to stamps history of stamps and follow them. It's basically this country's history.
Yeah.
On one-end square pieces of paper. There's one stamp I love. It's a 3-cent stamp. It's engraved and perforated, and it's probably from the 30s or 40s. And it's, you know, it's a small, pre-sorted size, and it's engraved, and it's about baseball. And there's a kid at the plate and a catcher, and then you can see first, second, third, shortstop in the field. You can see the fielders, the left, right, center field. And the background, there's a church and a farm.
Man.
And there's a church and a farm and one other building. So it might be a school with a flag on it.
You have to pull the loop down to look at this stamp. I mean, this sounds like...
This is dense.
There's people in the background. I counted 17 people.
And this is engraved.
Yeah, wow. And it's this big. It's phenomenal. It's the most beautiful piece of work you've ever seen.
Just down on a 1-inch stamp.
There's some. You know, the other thing that's interesting, when I was doing stamps, I got into, did this first one, the second one, and, I collected a little bit anyway, and I did some research for a project. I went back to school, got my MFA degree when I was 55 years old.
It's a good time to do it.
Yeah, as good as any. But part of it was I did a lot of work and research on stamps, and I got to participate in the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee meetings, which are closed, government closed-door meetings by the Stamp Committee. So they let me, for my thesis, they let me come to those meetings. And so I learned a lot about stamps and the history and the artwork. I designed an exhibit for the Smithsonian that featured artwork on stamps from the 20s on up, and the woodcuts and watercolors and scratch boards. And Norman Rockwell has a pencil drawing of a mailman and a dog chasing him. And all this, then I got all the original art, the 75 pieces, and designed an exhibit around it that featured the art and then the artist and the technique. So you would see the actual painting or pencil drawing and then see the
stamp.
And
then see the time stamp.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
That's great. Man, Donovan, I love doing the show because I didn't even know we were going to talk about stamps being awesome today.
Well, stamps are awesome.
They are.
And
we should talk about that more.
It is the one thing that's missing from the from a lot of emails.
There's a lot of things that...
Goddamn shit. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Dialine Conference and your talk over there.
Yeah, we forgot to tell you, we take breaks. We're going to do one of those now.
All right. I was going to tell you one thing, but we can change the subject.
No, let's talk about that first. What do you got? What are you going
to
tell us?
We can change it when we go back, unless you don't want to.
No, we'll go right now. What do you want?
Where I was going with that is part of my research in school was after being able to attend these meetings and see what goes on, 16 people, half of which are devoted to, it's a subject committee, so they're the ones that actually pick the stamps and qualify the subject matter for...
They're the ones that call you up and say, hey, would you like to design a stamp for the U.S. Postal Service?
And the answer is just yes, right?
That's a pretty good... Yeah. Could you imagine being the guy that said no to that? No. Sure.
So and after being there and getting to listen, so half of it, they're a subject committee, the other half is the design committee. I get to watch all this going on. And they're, at any given time, about 70, 80, sometimes 90 stamps current in use. And it blew me away.
I didn't realize that they had that many, concurrently.
So I did research. And I interviewed, just like you, anybody, saw people on the street. I did it, this was part of my school project. And the most I ever got was somebody knew 7 stamps. And usually people can go flag.
Flag one's big.
Is there one with a train on? No. Love stamp. Two or three.
Well, I can name a lot right now because we just mailed out our 7-year mailer or 9-year mailer. I don't even know how long my company's been around.
I think 9.
And And we were going to go first class, and we only mailed like 80 of these. So we just went to the post office, and I got a bunch of different assorted stamps. And I was like, I don't like that one. So then it was like, I need another denominations. I don't like the look of that one. It's probably the only one you did, so
name
I'm not going to name them.
Name them. Quiz. Do it. Go. What were they? No, do it now. Come on. We were just talking about this. How many can you name?
I bought the $2 one, which had, like, is it the Rockefeller Center person on it? I bought the 17-cent one with, like, a ram.
Okay.
It was on it. I bought a 10-cent one. I think it had a clock.
Great.
I bought the 5. I do not remember what was on it. I think I had to buy 2 10s.
You're getting really close to breaking the record here.
All right. And I bought the 1, the 2, and the 3-cent ones. Oh, it's been a couple months.
Okay.
But I know
you got four.
You got
four-ish.
Yeah, it was the polar bear postcard one that
it's 5.
They've been getting rid of that I didn't like.
So she did the ram also.
I did the ram. The ram was gorgeous.
No, the artist that did the polar bear did the ram.
Oh, okay. I just didn't. The subject matter of a polar bear on something I was sending out in March just didn't feel right. In March? And it didn't seem like it wasn't the season for it.
Dude, polar bears exist.
I sent the polar bears
365 days a year,
I sent the polar bears out on my Christmas card.
Polar bears are still there during the summer, you know.
You know, but this is... But
conifers.
I believe that they hibernate during that time is what I believe. I believe, you know, I'm just going to say that.
All right. Okay, you're off the hook. Good work. Good work.
Right. Yeah, that was actually my favorite one.
We're gonna go back. We're gonna put artwork in the show so that people can actually see these, right?
Maybe
do a little extra legwork.
It's called going to the post office.
Or just get out there.
It's unusual. You did pretty well. The Liberty Bell. I mean, that's not what people can get.
Yeah,
the forever stamp one. Yeah.
Now all the stamps are forever stamps.
These still had denominations on them. The ones that I bought.
Well,
but
those are makeup stamps. So if you still have a bunch of 42-cent stamps.
So, like the Simpsons ones that just came out, those are now forevers as well.
They had to do it.
Yeah, it was time. It was time for that.
And there's the Cowboys of the silver screen ones that are out now.
Yeah, aren't they excellent?
Yeah. Those? I think I just saw those.
Those are downstairs in the exhibit.
Yeah,
hall.
Yeah. There's an exhibit of those. The big artwork is down
there's
there.
So many cool stamps out all the time.
He's a philatelist.
Isn't that right?
My grandfather was.
He's got it in his blood.
Philatelist.
All right. So you actually were not talking about stamps at your presentation, and you should have been, obviously.
No,
it's pretty compelling. I'm not going to lie. You could come back here next year and pitch the stamp idea.
I could do that.
Oh, no. Dennis has given us the wave off. This is a terrible idea. Goddamn son of a bitch.
Boston's too far from San Francisco. I'm not going that far. I think
that's a lot of shipping involved there.
No, I'll come to you.
So today, now I was helping my friend Stefan was setting up a workshop right about the time that you hopped up on stage today. So I was there long enough to hear you say, and now I'm going to show you the work of my students. And I was like, oh, okay. Left. So I had to go. So Donovan stayed.
Donovan, good job.
I don't know, because the problem I had was that after seeing it, I realized that my student work was terrible. Obviously, because what your students did is at a different level than I've seen before, and it was impressive.
Yeah, good. You said something good.
Yeah.
I was worried for
that. It was a horrible work,
so
wasn't
you've been,
it?
Obviously, you've been teaching. You said you've been teaching at the Academy of Art University in San Francisco for 20 years, and obviously you've done something well with that program because the work that you were showing of your students was some of the best, you know, I've seen.
Thank you.
And it did not look like... that class did not produce what would be called student work anywhere else because that was all professional quality, top to bottom, from what we saw.
Thank you.
Unless you edit it down to that, you know, you're like, oh, I left down half my students.
No, there were four teams, and there was a cluster of work from each team, but I swear there was, you know, more than 10 times that much work from each team.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of, since I wasn't there, most of our listeners, sadly, were also not in the room. What kind of work do you have your students do? You say you teach one class. Is that one class a year? once a year? Do you teach two different sections of it in, like, spring and fall?
Yeah, there's a spring semester and a fall semester.
Okay.
I teach in the summer. It's one night a week, Wednesday night, 3 hours. We have four levels of package design,
mm-hmm.
and I teach packaging four right before they graduate.
Okay. So it's like a capstone kind of thing?
They're pretty serious. They have portfolio next, and that's it. So and they don't have to take packaging four. There's one, two, and three. So the students I have want to be there.
That's great. And, that's a big change from the students. Not that I had students that didn't want to be there, but I did have some.
No, it's the equivalent of a senior thesis for undergrad.
Yeah.
You know, really, it's that much work.
Well, that was undergrad work?
Yes.
That was amazing.
Oh, come on now.
No, it really was. It was pretty good.
It is. So it's, since you didn't see it.
Tell me about it.
Well, I changed. I've only been doing this. This is the fifth time, 2.5 years. I used to give, two projects, branding and packaging projects. Then the other teachers started ripping off my assignments. So I thought I would do something, number one, that they can't steal. Number two, that would get these guys truly ready to go to work. I assign a group assignment. So there's usually four groups of four or five people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all working on the same project as if it's my office. And I give this sense of big branding, private label store, packaging mm-hmm. for store categories project. And it's their project. I give basic parameters. I keep them. I give them guidelines. I don't hand out anything.
Right.
They take notes. I mean, it's the kind of thing where the cream rises to the top, and some of it squirts out the window, and some of it drops the floor.
Right.
People that were there today I picked one person, one student from each team, and the school paid for their airfare and their hotel. They paid $1,200 for each thing to photograph and work.
Nice.
Just all of that stuff was, I was getting pictures till, what's the day, Brian? Till like Wednesday night. I was still getting pictures.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But that's what it is, a group assignment.
Check. We're back on.
Hello?
Yeah. Who's there?
Hello?
Hi, I can hear you over here.
Dan?
Who's on first?
Landshark.
That is our second Landshark reference of this conference.
I really liked, though, when you told at the beginning that you said that you don't, when they ask if what do we need to do? You're like, I don't know. And then you said, if you don't give any directions, and it's their fault if the project sucks. That's good.
I give the assignment as if it's in the office. They know what the deliverables are at that point. They're grown-up designers by the time I get
mm-hmm.
And so when they ask questions, that's true. How many brands do we divide up the store in? They'll look at one of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Tell them, what's the answer? Why are you asking me?
But we gotta say what the assignment is, because we didn't tell the listeners what
the
assignment is.
Okay, so this current assignment, I change it every semester, but here's the example, is that we all know how smart Target is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard of them, yes.
Yeah, the way they do things, everything that Target touches. They decide to open a store, a retail store, by the name of Aero, A-E-R-O, that will take on Crate and Barrel, Williams-Sonoma, put all those offerings under one roof and do it the way Target would do it.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of price points up. Then take that store and do a house brand, a store brand, an Aero brand that's across categories.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be, vitamins and pet food and milk. I mean, it goes all the way across.
Sure.
And then divide the rest of the store up into standalone specialty, like Archer Farms for Target.
Sure, and
that's all food.
You have experience with Archer Farms, right?
We didn't name it, but that, so they have to come up with the category and then name it mm-hmm. and brand it and then do all the packaging inside that. How many packages, Michael? I don't know. How many packages, Dennis? This is, so how many categories do we have? They don't give them any answers. It's like, why are you asking me? You're supposed to go out and show me how smart you are. Go to the damn store and look. So that, I mean, that's really how I run. It's just like the office.
Right.
Don't ask me stupid questions.
When I love the thought behind that, because I think, and I taught for 7 years, and I just moved to a different town, so I couldn't keep teaching there. But I always felt like the last big test was turning the students from people who were there to take instruction and who were there to be told the next step and the next thing to do, to turn them into people that will figure that out for themselves and to really be kind of entrepreneurial in their own work. And, you know, so it's almost like teaching them to stop asking questions and start answering their own questions themselves.
Well, somebody in the audience asked when we were doing question and answer afterwards with the four students, somebody asked, how did you go about figuring all of this out as a group and who does what? And I mean, you know, you had to come up with all the answers within the team. How did you do that? And so part of her answer was, you know, we just had to grow up. And it got applause.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really great. I would never expect to hear that. But it's true. I mean, they had to figure out where they met, when they met. It's everybody has different schedules.
Yeah, because this sounds like a project you can't do in 3 hours once a week for 15 weeks.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
That's not even openness. But it's gotten around. I mean, they don't take, they either take one other class or no other class. You know, this one's Ilsa, the one that looks like Miss Hawaii, told me, and I'm not supposed to repeat this, but that she learned as much about typography and corporate identity and packaging in my class than she did her entire time at school. So she probably learned a lot, and then it all came to fruition. And you know,
like it all kind of like crystallized, and all kind of gelled at once. For that, that's great.
That's why I learned that shit.
So you can take all the credit. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, clearly, I'm getting a whole how presentations out of it. So that's great. Well, and so you've been teaching for like 20 years now,
20
you said?
Years this year.
Keep up with it?
My business turned 30 in April, and my birthday was the end of May, and I turned 60.
My God, and Christmas is coming up in just like 6 more months here. And
even numbers, even.
Nice.
It's all downhill from here.
Something else. I mean, we're an old-school design firm. Michael doesn't design on a computer. Starts with sketches, and our people start with sketches. So, you know, we have workbooks galore from projects in the last 20 years that show everything from pencil sketches to final work on the shelf. And it's a little bit of a different way of doing it, especially now. And Michael's way of working in the studio, we've got an open space with the designers in the center. He just kind of rotates around. They each have an extra chair at their desk, and Michael just kind of goes around and works it with each of them. So there are charrettes that go on, the big meetings and stuff. But there's daily stuff that goes on multiple times daily where Michael's just kind of rotating around the room with the designers. So, you know, from the interns to the people that have been there over 10 years, they're learning a lot. And they're developing in their own hand, and he lets them develop his people and his designers. But I've worked in a few studios, and it's a very different way of the principal handling the whole thing.
Right. Just being really, really kind of being involved, I want to say. Yeah. Dennis, you're the director of marketing for Michael Osborne Design. Does that process or that having that archive of material, do you find that makes your job easier? Do you find that it makes your job... If that's less traditional in the sense that a lot of design happens in currently, is that more difficult sell to kind of walk clients? There's like, oh no, we're not on the computer initially. Like we're not going to have something right out of the gate that is completely perfected.
That's a good question. I mean, and I'm sorry to say, a lot of it's relative to the client and how much they understand and where they are in the design process and if they've done this before. the people that want to see process, I can show them, you know, the redesign of a Jack Daniel's product, mm-hmm. And they'll be able to understand that for a private label, you know, pet food.
Right.
They'll understand. They'll be able to connect those things. So yeah, having that base of information that we can, there's enough to choose from that we can tell the story visually to people to help them understand what the process is we go through. It's not just, oh, thank you so much, here's the brief, goodbye, and then 3 weeks later we show up with the solution. It's a little bit more than that.
Right.
Where, some of the younger, the clients that maybe haven't been through this process a lot,
mm-hmm.
then you show it, and they get it.
Yeah.
And they, oh, that's where I'm taking
this. Yeah, that's
is there, where can we point our listeners to online to find out more about what you guys are about and your business and everything?
Website.
www.modsf.com for Michael Osborne Design San Francisco.com.
Modsf. Yep.
Throw people there. All right, Donovan, I say we take our last break, and do you want to come back? And
yeah, we've got one question we've got one question from our past guest, and then we've got to get questions from them for our next guest.
Okay. Sounds great.
Our last guest has a question for you.
Our last
and
guest being
Emily
for our listeners. We just said
Emily
it off
Cohen.
Mic, but
and either or both can answer this. Where was the question? Oh yeah. What do you think of design heroes, and are they essential anymore? And then who are your design heroes?
What do I think of design heroes?
I think the
people you look up to, that you follow the work, that kind of inspire you.
We were talking a lot about the differences in like the generations of designers, mm-hmm. like going from baby boomers all the way up to like the millennials or whatever they're called now, the kids, and how like we as slightly older designers feel like, you know, we have these like rocks and legends of design, you know, your Milton Glaser's that you look up to, and like, do the young people really have that, or do they only have this cool project that they saw online for 5 minutes and then they move on to the next thing?
Wow, what do I think of them? Of course, you think the world of your design heroes, and every young designer has designed, you know, they fall in love with, they're like their rock star designer, and you worship them, and you look at their work, and you emulate their work, and you know, you research them and admire, you know, yeah, I'm still like a groupie of some, you know, design heroes that are no longer with us, but that, and they have them. There's no shortage.
Yeah,
of design.
Well, who, all right. Who are your heroes?
Yeah, anyone
Bradbury
that...
Bradbury Thompson, number one.
Good call. Yeah,
yes,
good.
Absolutely Bradbury Thompson. I'm a huge fan. Huge fan. Been since... Bradbury Thompson was the first person's work that I saw back in school where I was like, man, that's it. That's great. Look at what that...
Does your heart rate go up, like, if you look at a book in his work?
A little bit.
He also did, like... I think he did, like, 100 postage stamps during his career as well.
He was on the CSAC committee. He was on the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee.
Donovan, bringing it all the way back around, man.
I went to all these meetings.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the design subcommittee.
Nice.
Paul Rand, of course, you have to put him on the list if you're my age.
Well, we just kick you out of the room, and if you don't, I mean, that's kind of how it works.
Well, I think we got to go back to, you know, like young people, you know, they'll say Steve Jobs or something, but it's Jonathan Ive, you know, at Apple mm-hmm. that's their hero, and they might not even, you know, they've got all their Apple stuff sitting around them. Or it's a guy like John Hoke, who's an industrial designer, leads 300 designers up at Nike. Or mm-hmm. people like Susan Rockrise at Intel or Eric Erickson at Target, creative directors, that enable all that good design to happen in those places. So it's a...
I always kind of, to go back to like the Steve Jobs, Jonathan Ive example, I'd really sometimes just like to see like the 5 or 10 people immediately under Jonathan Ive, because... You know, as visionary and as thorough as he is as a designer, he's got to have people that measure up to that as well. Otherwise, all of that design would fall apart if he's got no one to build it.
Yeah. Well, and a friend of Michael's is Ron Johnson, the guy that Apple brought over from Target to create the Apple stores.
Yeah, that's
now going to work at JCPenney.
I just heard that. Yeah.
Oh, great! Now I'm gonna have to buy stuff at JCPenney's again.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I had written
you'll
that store
to.
Off. It was one less spot in the mall. I had
you'll
to stop. Now I have to go.
That's still
that's
wearing
the change.
Grandma.
Yeah.
This time next year, you will want to go.
Yeah. Right, exactly. It'll be open. It'll be inviting. Awesome. Go for JCPenney's there.
I think all the young people, all the young designers have their heroes. They just do. You have to. And that's part of what keeps you passionate. There's people doing work that, you know, strikes you in the mm-hmm. heart. And that's what you want to be like. That's what designers are like. It's unlike any other job. It's kind of not even like a job sometimes.
Right.
We love working all night. Except when you get older. That's what makes you passionate, right? But for designers, right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Michael was redesigning his presentation up till half an hour before.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
He's getting photos right up till Wednesday night.
In fact, he just changed the entire student project and told the students last week.
He wasn't even going to do student work until like yesterday, and I got all these photos.
It's all my work.
Now I'm just going to get nice.
Did you like that question where somebody in the audience asked him, so how much creative direction does Michael give you on this work?
Did they not hear the presentation? Is that the deal? You started by saying, nice, go.
Yeah, stop asking me questions.
Do we think mood boards? I don't know. Should you do, if it's me, I can do a mood board.
Can
you do a mood board?
I liked it when you told it. You're like, I got a portfolio. It's not my portfolio.
I really say that sort of guy.
Yeah.
And if the project sucks, it's your fault this time.
So keeping our inner, what we call the interview train alive, we are next interviewing James Vittore, if we're going to do it Italian.
Yeah. And you got to do those hand gestures, too.
That plays great on the radio. Do you have a question you'd like to pass along to him?
Oh, let's see. Sure. Hi, James. What would we say? Let's see. What kind of ink do you use?
Done. Great. Got it. On tape. That's great, because he does so much, like, with a brush, and sure.
Yeah, it could be some fancy ink. We need to know.
Yeah.
Or he just rips open his Bic pen and drains it. That's my guess. He's just using standard
Bics. We don't need to keep guessing. We're going to know tomorrow. So.
All right. Well, we'll be back in a couple weeks. Comments, questions, follow-ups, 36point.com.
Great. Thank you very much to my Osborne.
Thank you
for joining us today. Hope you guys had a good time. Thanks everybody out there for listening. We'll see you again in a weekish.